Hello everyone, I'm Drew Hendry and welcome to Growth for Good. In this episode, we're talking about a business delivering something that really matters for people across the Highlands, access to mental health and well-being support that is truly person and community led. My guest is Lara Johnson-Scott, the founder of the Highland Wellness Collective. Now, Lara brings together dance, creativity, counselling and community action in a way that's helping people feel seen, heard and supported. Now, her story is powerful and the work she's doing is making a real difference. So in this episode, we explore how creativity can open doors to difficult conversations, why rural communities need flexible and compassionate support, and what it takes to build a service that genuinely meets people where they are. So if you care about well-being, community, or the future of mental health support, you'll want to hear this. So let's get into it. Hello, Lara.
Hello.
So what took you on your journey, and explain to me where you've been, what you've done to end up through counselling, through a range of other things, to end up running this amazing social enterprise that you run now?
Well, thank you for saying it's amazing, first of all. Yeah, it's a bit of an unusual journey, I think. I started, what brought me to the Highlands specifically is a background in dance. So I was a community dance artist. And I actually came to Inverness to work with Eden Court as their dance development officer. So my role was engaging the communities through art projects and dance to engage in movement and creativity from a perspective of health and well-being and connection, really. And that's my background. I'm trained as a dancer. And then it was through this work that it kind of led me into doing a lot of work with communities and connecting with people. And I think unintentionally, you do a lot of well-being and mental health support through working with communities, particularly in creativity. It makes people open up quite often unexpectedly. And I was working with a lot of young people as well, so it brings up those themes. And I became quite interested in exploring more concepts around mental health. And I've had my own personal journeys with my own mental health and challenges. And I developed a dance project. So I got funding from the Arts Council, the Creative Scotland Council, to develop a project that was called In the Light of the Moon. But it was all about my mental health journey and talking about kind of the way that when we go through mental health, a lot of people go through similar journeys, even if they're different experiences of mental health and different challenges of mental health. There's kind of a bit of a pattern. So the dance piece itself followed this pattern, and we developed, it was a duet with another dancer from Edinburgh and original music, and we developed it to take it into schools and communities to open conversation around mental health through dance. And alongside that, developed this workshop for young people around mental health and like using dance to open those conversations, as well as creating original music. We kind of developed a podcast at the side of it, a mental health podcast, to use the snippets.
Always good.
We all know it's not as cool as this one. But yeah, it was to use sound bouts of real people, real lived experience around mental health in the sort of score for the piece. And so this made me more and more passionate about mental health and creating and opening opportunities for conversation. And then lockdown hit, so everything stopped. And the one thing that I could continue around the project was this podcast. And so I continued having these conversations around mental health and recognised I felt there was more that I could do and more that I could offer, and wanted to do something more tangible. And so I went on and trained as a counsellor and decided to try and combine all these areas of interest. So my years in community development, project arts management that I've been doing now for 15 years, and then sort of interest in mental health and dance and combining it, and that's kind of where Highland Wellness Collective.
And what was that about the Highlands? What was the gap that you saw that you felt that this had to be put together to fill that void?
I think there's lots of organisations that offer a mixture of things. I think it's, for me, the gap was around creating something that looked at like the whole being. So a lot of services are like focused on, you know, we have, for example, Microsign, that's our most known mental health charity. They started kind of quite focused on peer support and suicidal support. And so it's very, we have sort of brilliant really brilliant charities that offer counselling, but they're focused, for example, we've got Relationship Scotland, Council of Highland, that offer relationship counselling. We have addiction counselling in the Nest that is specific. So they're all quite kind of, for me, the feeling was that people had to fit certain boxes to get to access. And maybe they don't, but the promotion and the way that it was presented. And I wanted to create something that was about collective, about community, about everyone was welcome in different ways, and there was access to support at different levels. So we run dance classes, we run a sober project, we run, you know, day retreats, but we also run professional counseling.
So this is clearly, you know, about you challenging perception and trying to make sure that you've got everything as an inclusive environment for people.
Yeah, definitely. And what we do offer from a counseling perspective is we offer sort of fixed rates, we offer sliding scale, we offer free. So there's more than one point of entry to accessing professional counselling. I also think in the mental health realm, because we're so passionate, because it also costs us a lot on the NHS, it's a big, you know, it's one of the biggest expenses, supporting people's mental health. The sector relies quite a lot on free volunteer peer-led support. And actually, I think it's about also allowing people to get access to professionally trained, well-trained, continuously, you know, informed knowledge. But still accessing those other things at the same time. So yeah, it was about trying to create a mixture of all those things and more than one way of entry, I suppose.
What was it about you, in your past, and your values that led you to go down this path then?
That's a challenging question, I think, how long is a piece of history. I think the main thing I've recognised recently, actually, is that my value is that I want to contribute as contribution. That's the thing I think that's driving. And I sometimes get really, like, frustrated because it's like, how do you know? Why am I always trying to do more? And, you know, it can be overwhelming sometimes. But it is about contribution, and it was trying to just bring what I knew and know and what skills I own to find a way to contribute, but also to create spaces for others to do the same. So that's where I think the collective idea came from, is, you know, it's not just me, and we work with a lot of freelancers, and we look at, and it's bringing people. Sometimes, you know, I'm a person that acts and thinks later a little bit. You know, I've moved countries
and lived all over.
No. That's something I'm very good at, of just going, you know, I've got this gut instinct, I want to try it, I'll go for it, and I'll figure out the logistics as I go along. And not everyone has that confidence. I think the work that we do also sometimes platforms other people to try things or to give something a shot. And that's my also way of contributing and facilitating space for people to.
And has it been relatively easy because of your personality, your outlook, to build a team of people around you to help support the collective?
I think so. It's hard. I think it's hard when you have a very strong vision. So I'm also recognising that I have a bit of control issues. That's been a really good learning thing in the business, because you have to reshift the vision. And so, but I've been incredibly fortunate to be surrounded. I've got a board of women that are incredible. That keep me grounded, but also run with the ideas at the same time. There's that really good level of mixture. And I've got freelancers. I think over the years, because I've worked in community engagement, I've built really lovely rapport with people. And particularly, I think, in the creative sector and in the community, third sector, it's, you know, you know quickly who works well and who doesn't, and you align with values, and it is all value-driven work. So it has been quite easy in a sense to pinpoint facilitators that I want to work with and freelancers that we want to engage with, because it's a values-driven and heart-led work. So we look for people that align with those values, and that makes it quite easy, I think, to select people or to engage with people and collaborate with people. I think not select.
So the Wellness Collective sits at the intersection of creativity, community, and mental health. Mm-hmm. How does that shape the way you work together to support people?
So I think it shows up in different ways. And I think it's about maybe giving you a bit of explanation of how our services are, because we do have sort of your bog standard, and I'm doing that in quotation marks, counselling where you go for one.
So this is great counselling. It's basic stuff that you do.
Yeah, no. And then we have different strands of projects and services that we offer. And I think creativity shows up everywhere anyway. You know, I think for anyone that's doing kind of community or something innovative or something different, often I think creativity, people think art, and actually creativity is just trying different ways of approaching work. So I think that shows up constantly in the way that we work anyway. But the intersection of community, mental health and creativity shows up in more than one way. So with our counselling, for example, my background is in dance, so I teach a dance class every week on a volunteer basis. That's kind of a way of giving back to the community, and all the money from that class funds access to reduced or free counselling. So it's using those kind of skills and people engaging in dance and that place for community to actually fund and pay it forward, we call it, in our organisations, that's what we call it. And I think using creativity in different ways. So within our Sober Collective, for example, we got funding from the Highlands Detect Interface and the Local Improvement Fund to set up this Highlands Sober Collective space for people that are sober curious. The phase one was to bring a core group of people that then are designing the next phase of what sober engagement connection looks like. But that was all the workshops were kind of led by creators and freelancers in the community that did creative activities with them to bring people together to facilitate conversations. Something I did before setting up the Highland Wellness Collective, I was the therapeutic arts coordinator for the Highland Hospice. Mm. And it's so incredible to watch what conversations happen when people are engaging with something else and doing that creative work. So that can really open space for those mental health conversations that feel quite vulnerable sometimes. And when you're engaging or painting or fiddling with your hands, it kind of makes it much easier. Well,
let's talk about that personal thing, because would you describe the Highland Wellness Collective as heart-led? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, how does that work? How do you do that?
Yes, so I would definitely describe it as heart-led. I think it's about, I think everyone that we work with and that works with us and is part of the Highland Wellness Collective comes from a place of compassion and care, and the work that they want to do is about, so that's why I call it heart-led. I suppose I was actually listening back to one of the previous episodes of the podcast, and Dr. Cass Jones talks about Ikigai, and I think that there's that kind of parallel when you talk about Ikigai and heart-led, and it's about, this work isn't easy. Nothing is easy. Running your own business is not easy. You know, social enterprise funding, all of the things that come with it. So being driven by a why and a purpose is what keeps you going for me. And that's what heart-led for me means, because it's about creating change and having impact and ripples to creating a society that feels much more safer and welcoming and connected and just overall better, feeling better, you know, well. And the people that I work with believe in that. And so not still getting paid appropriately, but they will go over and beyond and keep driving that mission. And I think that's when what I mean by heart-led. It's not, sometimes that's a problem, because, and that's why you need a really good board, because sometimes you're like, yes, but I'll do it for free. And actually that's not sustainable, but it still allows me to keep believing in the vision, even when it's hard. I think that's important.
You've just talked there about having a necessity for the board to keep you in line in terms of making sure that the business part of it is still sustainable, so you can keep going. You reinvest the funds you get from events, from dance classes, from other things into either free or subsidised support. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about how to do that? How to, again, you know, to keep your board online and keep that sustainable?
Yeah, but it's hard. I think... Yeah, I would hold my hands up and say when I came into this, I was very naive, I think, of, maybe naive isn't the right word, but I come from working in and raising funds for other organisations that had been established for a while, and it's very different when you're the new kid on the block. So I was like, yeah, mental health, we'll get loads of funding. Not true. Because it's so competitive, it's difficult, yeah. And it doesn't mean that the cause isn't right, it's just it's very competitive. You know, we're living in a cost of living in a crisis, we're living in difficult funding scenarios, so, you know, you have to prove your worth, and that's fair enough. So it has been challenging, but I think it's, again, it's coming back to what's the why and why we're doing this. And I also, what I have learned is that people are more generous than you think when you do give them the opportunity to do that. So maybe the funding hasn't always been the right way forward, but for us, because we haven't fit, or, you know, we didn't get it, or whatever. But the events that we do, so we do a pre-love sale, we've done it now 2 years running, and it's essentially a pre-love clothes event. People can make clothes, we then sell them on in a big event, and both times raised over $2,500. But the amount of people that donate, but also because of that, we've had some private donations of people that couldn't come and decided to just pay it forward through our Pay It Forward scheme. We've had people that pay like a small donation monthly to us that just really believe in the mission of making it accessible. So if you give people the opportunity to show up, they often do. Not always very good at advertising that. So I'll push that today.
Yes, we'll put a link on the
I think I think I've learned to trust that people will show up, and if it's the right thing to keep going. I think the hardest part is when you, because I'm the founder, I just want to make it work, and also you want to make sure that, you know, I think that the people that I work with get paid appropriately, because also that's all part of mental health.
Right? Well, let's talk about the people you work with, because you work with a wide range of collaborators, creatives, volunteers, people who've been there and done that in different sectors and so forth. Now, you know, for those of us kind of watching from the outside, that sounds like quite a difficult thing to do, to kind of keep everybody together. But working with such a group of amazing people who are giving their time and so forth for this cause, how do you manage that? I mean, how do you keep all that going?
I think just being good at communicating and building really trusting relationships. I would caveat that the people that we work with are very much project-based, unless they're the counsellors that work on a more regular, sort of weekly. So they come and go, but it's...
That must present its own challenges.
Yeah, it does. And I think for me, it's about coming back to those values. So people that align with our values, that we trust, that have, you know, some people we've never worked before with, but I know of, because, you know, community talks and, you know, word of mouth is actually a really big thing, I think, in business of trust. And for me, it's coming back again to those values and trusting people and being honest and knowing when to ask for help. So being able to reach out to the board or my colleagues and just saying, actually, this is beyond my capacity, but you have a really good skill in that. Can you engage and take this on and be better at delegating sometimes? But yeah, and just again coming back to, for me, it's like we all have, you know, people I work with, we have a letter of agreement and we've agreed to work on it, you know, and we do that in counselling, we have a counselling agreement. So it's like, let's come back to what we decided we're doing here and always come back to why this started and why we're working together and what works and what doesn't.
And that vision helps people keep on the track that you want, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. And also acknowledging that we all maybe be coming from different backgrounds and different perspectives doesn't mean that it's done maliciously, or, you know, like I might express myself in one way and it might be received differently. So also acknowledging that we are all individuals and all humans before the work. And so being able to go, I'm sorry, I maybe said that wrong, or, you know, you're doing something a bit different to me. What's that about? And be curious, I think.
Which goes back to the heart.
Yeah.
You were talking there about the pre-loved clothes sale fundraiser that you've run. But you've also done things, as you mentioned earlier, like the Sober initiative, and you used to run a book club. Mm-hmm. How have those initiatives impacted on the community in terms of what you've been delivering?
So the pre-launch sale, I always smile so much about it because I love it. It's, you know...
Who doesn't love a bargain?
Who doesn't love a bargain, exactly.
And there's some great stuff out
there. It is great stuff. And this year, actually, we did it. So the first year was just for the Highland Monarchs Collective. This year, we did it in collaboration with a local charity, Ras Ash, that's the Rape and Sexuality Service. And that was a really nice way to collaborate with someone else in the third sector and support more than one good cause. So I really enjoy that, and I'm hoping to do more of these and more collaborative ones.
So anybody that's watching or listening just now, if they've got any contacts with us, let me know.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to come and do them with us, please do. So we host them in WASP, that is just a beautiful space.
So that's the Creative Academy in Inverness.
Yeah, it's stunning. And for me, also aesthetic helps, you know, helps the buying experience. So that's really lovely. But what we also do as part of the event is we have some guest stalls. So both times we had someone, well, the first time we had someone doing Reiki and someone doing neck massages, and we had someone like selling botanical local made Loch Ness jewellery. So, you know, this time we had Unravel Tea, that is the Scottish blend made tea. So it's, you know, very unique kind of wellness local businesses. So it was a chance to promote them as well. We had someone doing tropical skincare. We had someone doing, again, Reiki, and someone else doing some massage. So we had lots of brilliant contributions as well. So it's not just about the pre-loved, it's about community. And we had a community wall where people could write like positive messages to each other. And I just loved it. And you know, in 2 hours, we raised so much money and so many donations came through. The way that I would say impacted the community is it's a really lovely day out for people. For the smaller businesses, it's
just that alone is something. But when you talk about the other impacts of that, the conversations, the interaction, all those things are important.
Yeah, and the small businesses, you had a chance to sort of connect with each other and meet, and also the wall. And I think the donations that came through, so a lot of people hadn't heard of us, and then had heard of us. So it was, it, you know, we, you know, our social media got bigger, we connected with more people, they found some, we got clients through it, so they were then able to access counselling because they got to meet the organisation that often makes it easier to access that support. So there was more than one way of connecting. We had a queue outside as well that was wild. So, and then with the Highland Sober Collective is a project close to my heart, really, because I am 2 years sober, out of choice, not, it wasn't for any addiction, but there's no judgment there. You know, there's multiple reasons why
you made a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, it was good for my mental health. But my family does have a history of challenges. So it's something really important to me. And it was about creating space, not just for people who are already sober, but people that are sober curious. And the project brought people together that were sober curious and have since been able to say, you know, I was going to have a, you know, I was going to make a choice when I was struggling, and then I thought of the group and I chose not to. And that feels really rewarding for me. And there is a movement.
And rewarding for them.
And rewarding for them, yeah. I think it was about creating a space where you suddenly felt understood and you had something that supported you make maybe harder choices sometimes.
Well, that support runs into other areas as well, because you've been teaching dance classes across the Highlands. Mm-hmm. How has that shaped your view of the energy and creativity that you've encountered as you've been teaching these classes?
It's challenging because the Highlands are so diverse, I think. So for me, I think the major thing is my chance of doing that. So, you know, I lived in Uist for 2 years. I was the dance person there. In Kinlochbury, in Inverness. So there's like huge diversity. And I think that's really influenced the way that I see the Highlands, because I think people misunderstand it sometimes and don't recognize it's, you know, it's a huge ecosystem, really. The Highlands have diverse communities, and that's really influenced the way that I.
Which is wonderful in some ways, but also.
And challenging,
in other ways.
So I think, it has allowed us to understand different perspectives, and maybe it's created those connections in more than one community that, you know, when we talk about grassroots led, you know, it's like, I feel like I am genuinely part of the community and I can understand maybe not all of the communities, I'm not assuming that I know everything, but I definitely feel like I have a wider understanding as maybe someone that doesn't travel across the Highlands of what the diverse needs are, and that allows us to be more responsive to what the community genuinely needs rather than just assuming. And that is really important, I think, in the work that we do, and be connected to those voices.
That's a really interesting picture about the Highlands and the area that you cover and the experiences you've had. What are the biggest barriers that people face trying to access mental health care in the Highlands? And what does the collective do to help mitigate those kinds of issues?
I think there's a lot of different barriers, and it depends on who you're talking to. Obviously, we have a very obvious one, a financial barrier. That's a huge one. That, you know, we know that we're in a bit of a cost of living. We know that there is quite, I think I read recently statistically that 15% of children in the Highlands live in poverty. And so there's a huge deprivation of poverty line up here. So accessing paid for fee at counselling isn't always possible.
So part of that's geography as well, because of the rural nature.
The travel you have to engage, you know, because you're not just, you know, if you're coming to face-to-face counselling, that's where we primarily work in Inverness, you know, you have to put in a bus, you have to travel, you know, all of that. So we do offer online. We also, the counsellor that works primarily with me, Kate, she does a lot of outdoor walk and talk therapy, so she'll travel and do it outside.
Is that becoming an ever more popular aspect of the support you give?
I think so. It's something that we at the moment are also trying to promote a lot, because I think there's huge benefit around being outdoors and in nature. And it also, again, reduces those barriers. So for some people to come into a room can feel really daunting, but to walk in a forest might feel more commonplace, or to in their local park even. It doesn't have to be in the wilderness, you know, and that can feel a bit more accessible and less confronting. Mm. So, you know, and also there's that environmental side of people who are becoming more aware of their environment and wanting to be more climate aware. And so that all ties in, I think, really nicely. And the other things I think we're doing to create barriers, to minimize barriers to access. Again, you know, we have this financial thing, but also like our presence, we're present online. So we're engaging with people that access social media quite a lot. And we've had quite a few clients recently through our TikTok, because I do sort of small snippets of, you know, explaining some concept that we use in therapy that really can help people understand their selves. And it's that little step into, oh, well, this is maybe something that I can understand more when I'm in therapy. And so it allows people to access us. So there's that knowledge exchange, I suppose. The community events make us personable, I think. You know, having a face, we're not just an organisation behind a brand, but there's people, there's humans behind it. I'm very open about my own mental health. It makes it, I think, more accessible. You know, I still go to therapy, and I'm a therapist.
Let me ask you about your own mental health, mm-hmm. because spending all this time caring about other people, trying to assist other people, has its own stresses. Mm-hmm. What do you do to kind of escape from the world that you're in when you're delivering all these things to people? What is it you do to escape?
I zone out, no. And Netflix, no. I do a lot of different things. It depends on the week and it depends what I need. We do talk about in these professions, and my other part-time role is with the RATASH. So we talk about vicarious trauma. So we do a lot of work around making sure that we are supported. So as professionals, counsellors have to go to supervision with a what we call another mentor supervisor. So you've got space to unpack stuff that you're carrying that you need to, so you don't disclose clients. No, it's still confidential, but you talk about the cases you're working with and anything that stays with you, so that you can make sure you're doing an ethical job, but also not carrying it home. And then in my own time, you know, I just like any person in the Highlands, we like going walking. You know, we had a dog, we sadly lost him last year, but we're getting a new puppy. So, you know, that'll be keeping me very busy. Yeah, the spring spaniel as well. So You know, I'm very obviously
anybody
into
who's
movement.
Ever had a new puppy knows it's 2 years of a long pee.
Yes.
Before you get to the good bit.
Yeah. Yes, I know. It feels like a long time. Our springer spaniel was 11, so it's been a while. But yeah, and obviously I'm a big advocate of movement. So yeah, I strength train. I move a lot. I used to run quite a lot. I don't run as much, but I did set up a run club for a little bit. It was called the Slow Glow Run Club. It was for women to run at night time. So you kind of create, again, everything
in this
fantastic
idea.
Yeah, it was great. It was just, I don't have capacity to do it all, unfortunately, but it was
well, I think anybody listening and watching to this or you're doing any investigation at all on what you can do with the Wellness Collective will be aware that you're pretty busy
yeah.
With it. So going forward, what are the plans and ambitions for the Highland Wellness Collective? What do you want to see happen in the next few years?
Oh, big plans. I have big plans.
Great.
And big hopes, big dreams.
Let's hear about them.
Yeah. So first and foremost, we'd really like to get a space of our own. So we currently work by hiring some counselling spaces, and then I have a dedicated counselling space in my home that where we really want to be able to get a place of our own. So that's our next step, that would have a community space where we can host more community groups, we can host other charities, other third sector organisations, just peer groups, you know, just bringing more people together under one roof. So that's a big ambition, as well as developing more student placements, so supporting the counsellor field, you know, giving students placements with us and keeping them, retaining talent here in the Highlands. And also, student placement would allow us to offer constantly more affordable counselling. So expanding our counselling service really is something that we would really like to do. There's other big dreams, like eventually we'd love to have like a wellness festival where we have everyone together. You know, there's lots of
so
big dreams.
So you're encouraging everybody to get that.
Yeah,
please
do.
Support or ideas.
Yes. So, but essentially, just keep growing kind of how we're doing it, but expanding it more and bringing under a bigger roof, essentially, where we can bring more people in. That's, I think, the big dream, and to become a much more established counselling service. So when people go, oh, I need counselling in the Highlands, they come to us.
Well, Lara, thank you for the work that you've been doing with the Highland Wellness Collective, and thank you for being on the Growth for Good podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a delight having you.
Thanks for watching and listening to this episode of Growth for Good. A big thanks to Lara for joining me and for the amazing work she and the Highland Wellness Collective are doing right across our communities. If you found this conversation helpful, please give the video a like and subscribe to the channel. It really helps us to reach more people who might benefit from these stories. All the links to the Highland Wellness Collective are in the description, so feel free to take a look and to support their work. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll see you in the next episode of Growth for Good.